On this episode, we discuss One Missed Call, the scariest movie based on a thing that your answering service says.
Welcome to the Flophouse, listeners. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
So this needs to be addressed. Stuart, you're wearing some very small bathing shorts.
Yeah, swim trunks.
Why is that?
I just bought some, and I thought it, like, it, you know, would be really comfortable.
Just for laughs, you thought you'd change into your sort of Speedo style.
Is it very comfortable?
Well, they're comfortable, and I didn't think laughs. I thought maybe, you know, it'd make me look good on the podcast.
How does it feel? Is cradled the right word? Do you feel cradled right now?
Yeah, like I feel like a nice hand is cupping
so
everything.
So let's paint a picture for listeners. Stuart's wearing some Converse
shoes.
Filthy!
With white socks. And then there's a big expanse of bare leg going up to
very pale.
What I would describe as a strip of cloth covering his junk area.
Yeah.
Junk area.
And then a yellow T-shirt that says "My best friend is Jesus"
with a picture of Jesus ministering to children. You got a compliment for the shirt?
Yeah, I got a compliment on the shirt and the shorts, obviously,
and for his package.
Yeah. Well. Awkward.
So, but in non-swim trunks news, we watched One Missed Call tonight.
Yeah. That didn't make me feel cradled or good.
No. Man. Although, I gotta say, I don't want to skip ahead too far to the ratings already, but this was a winner compared to some of the ones that we'd seen.
Well, certainly
recently.
Compared to what we've watched recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's this, not 10,000
BC. Coming out of 10,000 BC, anything.
This movie was 12,000 years later and like 100 times better. But anyway, One Missed Call. Starring Shannon Sossamon. And Edward Burns.
Yeah, Shannon Sossamon is in, like, my least favorite movie of all time. I don't know if we've addressed that before.
Yeah, 40 Days and
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, right.
You encouraged people to check it out from their local video store and then throw it away.
Yeah, that offer still stands, guys. Nobody's had to ask me to compensate them for that, which I
appreciate. They felt good after they did
it. Yeah, obviously.
It's worth the money.
Yeah, so as I said during the movie, Shannon Sossamon and Ed Burns, two of the most expressive actors of their generation, just real.
I think this is our second Ed Burns movie, right?
Sound of Thunder.
I think the only way it could be less expressive is if it was Charlie Rose and that one rich socialite who had all that plastic surgery so she looks like a Catwoman now. Like two people who can't move their faces at all.
Yeah, well, Shannon Sossamon just looks worried throughout the whole movie, and Ed Burns is playing
the
note of gravelly. He's... I think he's really good at playing gravelly.
That was his solo album, Songs in the Key of Gravel.
Yeah,
and of course, a beautiful performance by Ray Wise also.
Yeah, Ray Wise, man,
he's like helium. He's like a burst of helium to any movie. It just
he
rises,
can enliven anything. Ray Wise, for people who maybe don't remember, best known as Leland Palmer in Twin Peaks,
and one of the bad guys from RoboCop.
Yeah, I always think
that's
of RoboCop.
True.
Yeah,
he's
in many, many things.
He starred in Jeepers Creepers 2. Certainly the best thing about that movie.
Yeah, lately he's been in Reaper on the CW, I think it
plays
is.
Plays the devil on Reaper.
And here he plays the producer of an exorcism and miracles-based television show, but it's more like Unsolved Mysteries.
It does live broadcast.
That's right, it does a live broadcast from a church.
I don't want to get ahead of the plot, but
I
want to say that
the
like
plot house.
It's Ray Wise shows up for a moment to enliven the proceedings and to create great enjoyment in the audience, and then completely disappears from the story without any resolution to his storyline.
No resolution to the "I just produced a TV show in which someone was murdered in real life in a church."
Yep,
story.
Somebody was murdered on film.
It's like, egg on my face. I guess this is going in the jeers column in TV Guide. Well, I guess I'm on to the next episode.
Yeah, I guess
peace out,
Shannon Sossamon.
This is the worst thing since Al Capone's vault. Well, on to my next project. I hear the Jersey Devil's been caught, and the Mothman is on the loose. Let's go make TV shows about those.
Sure. Yeah, but so there are murders.
Ray Wise. Now I hate him.
Hey, that Mothman movie wasn't very good either.
Yeah, we should watch that one, too. Mothman Prophecies.
yeah.
It's a little old. It came out
4 years ago, say. But
I think it came out like 6 years ago. Anyway, One Missed Call. Should we go over what the plot is about in this crazy
caper? Yeah, Elliot, you're aces at this, so why don't you do your fast recap?
It had something to do with cellular phones, right? Because everybody uses those, right?
Shannon Sossaman's friends have a problem. They keep missing calls. Then when they listen to the message, it's them being killed. And they go, this is horrible. I'm getting messages of myself being killed. This is crazy. And then they start seeing horrible phantasms around them, and then they usually get killed. One of them is hit by a train. One has a flying piece of metal from a construction site.
Yeah, some rebar.
Thrown through his chest, and so forth. Shannon Sossaman investigates with the help of Ed Burns, the policeman who doesn't believe in ghosts but kind of does, and Margaret Cho, who shows up out of nowhere for a couple scenes as another policeman who really doesn't believe in ghosts, so much so that she is a non-factor.
Yeah, another character that does not have a character arc or anything that's resolved.
No, yeah. Ray Wise comes in as the producer of this television show that somehow has heard of this phone problem and knows that Shannon Sossaman's Latina friend is the next victim. That he broadcasts an exorcism. She's superstitious, being Latina and Catholic. You know, it's very bizarre that she's a modern college student, but they're like, we can give you an exorcism, and she's like, Santa Maria, gracias, gracias.
No, that was good.
Thank you. That was what she sounded like. And then, anyway, to cut a long story short, it turns out that there was a hospital that burned down years ago, and there was a little girl and her mother in it. Everyone thought that the mother was hurting the little girl to get attention, but it turns out that this little girl, whose little sister is still alive, was some sort of psycho monster. They're both dead, and the little girl is going through telephones and killing people.
Yeah, it turns out it's the evil sister, who's like a bad seed character.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, like the good son.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, like Macaulay Culkin.
Elijah Wood. Oh, yeah, Macaulay Culkin was the bad one in that one.
Yeah.
I got it mixed up.
Of course he's the bad one.
Just like in real life.
And
the end... Should I give away the ending?
Well, let's jump back now that you've given like a good overview.
Okay,
sure.
So, a ghost of a little girl is killing people through phones.
Yeah,
and Shannon Sossaman has it happen to all of her friends and gets creeped out. And, you know.
Well, I mean this is a great horror movie, Elliot, because it plays on the common fear that everyone has about getting calls on their phone. It's the most terrifying experience that you can have in life. I mean, I was wondering what the metaphor for the, like, because, you know, most horror movies are in some way, like, allegorical or they're playing on a common fear.
Well, they're just a comment on something in society.
Yeah, I mean, the closest I could come up with is the idea that cell phones are giving you cancer. Cancer in this form, an evil ghost child.
Yeah.
I think it's like, with cell phones, even when we miss a call, people can still get in touch with us. We're never alone, even when ghosts are around. Like, if we had rotary phones, then the ghost wouldn't be able to get to us unless if we were in our house.
Well, I mean, it's really going down, like, the checklist of technology. Like, there are all these techno thrillers where it's like, you know what? Technology, it's getting ahead of us.
My favorite one
it's going to kill us someday.
My favorite one of those is the one – has it come out yet? The one with – what's his name from the Skulls and Dawson's Creek?
Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson, where he's a photographer. Yeah.
Oh, I almost picked that up on the video, sure.
I want to say – because it's like The Ring, but they were like – let's take a step back. You know, let's go back. Let's go to an earlier piece of invention. It's The Ring, but it's just one frame, yeah. You know.
Still photography.
Yeah, what's next? The like the bread maker that kills people.
I'm waiting for the flip book movie. Yeah. Where's an evil
and
flip
going
book?
Back. It's nice. Like, oh, portraits. I mean, like, well, I guess that's the Portrait of Dorian.
Yep, yeah, yep. That is.
Yep,
that
little silhouettes.
That is a story from 100 years ago, yes.
But man.
Oh, we have
cell
fun.
Phones.
No. Cell phones. Yeah, so it's evil cell phones, but there's no reason this girl chose cell phones, right?
This movie jumps directly into the killing. I mean, the teaser of this film.
This movie is a lean 87 minutes.
Yeah. Trim. It begins with
it's not like what was that one with Hayden Christensen in a coma?
Awake.
It's not like Awake, which was 90 minutes long but felt like it should have been 10 minutes long. That was like a student short film expanded to epic length. But you know, this one, yeah, people start dying fairly quickly.
Well, immediately. I mean, you know, I mean, there's always a teaser in these horror movies where, the, you know, death comes right away. But even so, like this movie starts with there's this woman next to a koi pond, which I guess is a nod to the fact that this is a Japanese.
That's
roommate.
After the title, like before
no,
the title
right
sequence.
Before, right?
There's a. Is it before the fire or after? Because the movie opens with a brief shot of that fire at the hospital.
Yeah, and then it cuts to the chick in the koi pond.
Then it cuts to the koi pond.
Where she's scared because her cat disappears. Which is, as Stuart pointed out, cats do move. They have legs. Yeah.
Cats are known to leave and come back whenever they want
totally
to.
She's totally freaked out by the fact that one moment she looks and her cat's there, and then the next moment it's not there. And she goes over looking for the cat, and then...
she bends over in her low-cut shirt, reminding us that this does take place in Cleveton.
Yeah.
The town of Cleavage. Where...
And then Carrie-style, an arm comes out of the water and grabs her and pulls her in. And then, for good measure, pulls the cat in.
Yeah, well, that was important, because I thought for a little while the cat was in cahoots with the ghost. But that clearly showed...
Well, they still could
that...
have been, and the hands just turned on.
Yeah, the ghost promised the cat some sardines.
I had actually forgotten that a hand jumped out, which brings to mind the fact that the ghost in this movie has no real modus operandi. She just kills with whatever's available, and sometimes with things that aren't available, like... There's a knife in the eye, there's a piece of rebar that flies out, there's a train, there's ghostly hands that strangle someone under their skin, there's a hand from a pond. Like, it's almost like they wanted to do like Final Destination, but they didn't think about it.
Well, but
much.
Also at the beginning, the ghost appears to kill by methods that could easily be explained away as an accident. And then I guess over the course of the movie, the ghost gets tired and just like, yeah, fuck it. I'm not going to try and cover up. I'm
a
ghost.
A knife to the eye is kind of pretty accidental. Yeah.
When it comes to the peephole in a door.
And then disappears.
Like, and then explodes all the windows.
It implies.
The ghost by the end is like, you know what? I'm not going to get arrested. I'm a ghost. I don't have to be really subtle and coy.
But the implication of the koi pond scene is that this woman killed someone, put their body in the koi pond, and the ghost has chosen to use that as their weapon.
Yeah, but that doesn't pay off.
It doesn't make sense. I don't,
Yeah, it's weird.
Why is there a hand in there?
Yeah, I don't really
like,
get
was
it.
Thing taking a bath? I don't understand. Thing the hand, not Thing, Ben Grimm.
Yeah. And not Man Thing.
And not Man Thing.
Or Swamp Thing.
Or Man Bat or Swamp Thing or Thing Number One. That Thing, that Lauryn Hill
that
song.
Thing You Do.
Or That Thing You Do.
Yep. Not a DVD copy of that.
No. That would be so awesome if there was a movie where the ghost only chose to kill people through DVD copies of That Thing You Do. So like someone is walking by the shelf on a video store and the case is slowly opening and then they go, "Huh?" and the DVD comes flying out and slashes their throat.
Like in Hellraiser 3.
But with That Thing You Do.
If what's his face, the guy who directed The Ring and The American Ring, and
Gore Verbinski.
Yeah, Gore Verbinski.
Director of Pirates of the Caribbean, right?
Had a real grudge against
a real
Hanks.
Grudge. Ah, nice play on words there, Dan.
So it was like, in this Ring remake, I'm just gonna use it as a hatchet job against Tom Hanks.
He had a real grudge. He hired a rabbi to Jew on someone.
Keep it going.
He gave a woman the eye.
Yeah, that was Korean, but that's
Korean.
Good.
Yeah, well, it's Asia,
Sure, Asia.
What other J. Har movies are there?
Into some dark water.
Yeah, there you go. Good one.
Yeah, man.
Took her down to Tortilla Flats. That's a J. Har movie, right? So they could watch the tequila sunrise.
Close.
It was a real case of brain donors.
All right.
All right. That's a great one, dude. Oh, man, you're sharp as a tack.
Well, any John Turturro movie where it's basically the Marx Brothers.
You gave her the old choo-choo and the Philly Flash.
Okay.
They were racing for Mother Jugs and Speed.
Point is that this...
the Parallax View. And we're done.
This movie broke with horror movie tradition by...
not being scary.
That was one big way. It also didn't introduce a group of potential victims and then knock them off one by one. Instead, it basically knocked off everyone we'd met and then was like, oh shit, we need... let's just introduce a new character so we can kill them.
Well, they'd show someone who was Sharon Sossaman's best friend and then she died. And then it was like, oh, here's another friend of hers at the wake. And now they're best friends, and then she dies, and it's like, well.
She's like, hey, I got this really weird phone call. Can you help me out with it?
It's almost like she was just known as the girl who was interested in phones on campus. So it was like, I guess we're friends now. I got a weird phone call.
Yeah, I think my favorite moment in the entire movie is when the one friend gets the phone call, and they're like, oh, my God, you're going to die, whatever. So they go to talk to the guy at the phone kiosk in the mall. Yeah. And he's like the coroner in the movie who's like eating a sandwich and like, whatever. It's your phone. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, like, he's the equivalent in this movie is like, Zelda Rubinstein's character in Poltergeist. Like, we were like, oh, we need to go to a real phone expert. Let's go to the guy who sells cell phones.
I was going
to
say the robot in the movie Rotor. who was the janitor, and they asked the robot, what's going on in this laboratory? And he's like, oh, geez, I don't know. Oh, man, you got to ask somebody else.
But why
I guess most people
think...
haven't seen the movie Rotor, I guess.
No. Anyway.
They're like, okay, who's going to be able to help us with this killer phone problem? Who really knows about phones? The minimum wage employee.
Well,
the guy who convinces people to sign up for a cell phone
plan. Not that there's anything wrong with being a minimum wage
employee. No, surely.
Obviously, yes.
But I imagine very that he has his own dreams, you know? Like his focus isn't just being a cell phone guy.
I figured he was just like
the
guy... You
don't think he's in it for, like, it's not a career for
it's
him
a,
to be
No,
like,
it's a crusade. Okay. He's like the guy in the Fave 5 commercials where the guys who don't have the Fave 5 own a wizard. where it's like this guy loves phones, like he's just in it to spread the gospel of the Fave 5. So I imagine this guy was like that, except he loves sandwiches.
Yeah, except for he's just like
I'm just digging.
You can do whatever
sandwich.
You want with your phone. Like that was the thing. Like they went to him to try and cancel the service, and when that didn't happen, he just sort of gave them permission to do whatever, and so they stomped on their phone. That was their big solution.
I guess what you're saying is this was one of many unnecessary steps.
Yeah.
Such as there's a later scene where Ed Burns calls Sharon Sossaman, and she hangs up. Oh, she doesn't answer because she's busy, and he goes, ah! And then he goes to a librarian at the school library, I guess, and is like, did you see so-and-so? And then he gets a phone call. It's Sharon Sossaman. She goes,
Shannon.
Oh, Shannon Sossaman. What's up? What did you call me about a minute ago? Why bother showing us that she missed his call?
Yeah, there's an intermediate step. I mean, unless that's just keeping in the theme of missed calls.
But at that point, don't show us that it's him calling. Just show she has a missed call so that she gets scared. Like,
it would have been a lot better if after she, you know, ignored it, then she went back and looked at her phone. She was like, one missed call? What the? Oh, God. Oh, whew. I thought that was a ghost.
Yeah, one missed call from caller ID Edward Burns.
She's like, fuck, he's a ghost?
Oh, yeah, this explains everything.
Hey, the weirdest part...
He's a ghost from his character in Saving Private Ryan.
Hey, you know, right now the movie's also
Wait,
playing
but he
again for some
Saving
reason.
Private Ryan.
I can't remember.
Oh, I mean, but he is a World War II veteran.
One of the weird things about the movie is that right before anyone dies in the movie... Their body gets all, like, dusty and, like, weirdly indistinct.
It's like the Golden Compass, almost.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's a lot... I guess what Stewart's getting at is there's a lot of random shit that gets thrown in from other movies in this. Like, when you're gonna die, your body turns into dust, and you see all these people walking around who have, like, They Live faces.
Yeah, monster faces.
Monster faces, and then, like, there's a creepy lady pushing a creepy baby carriage, which is only kind of... tangentially attached to the villain at the end. Like, it's just like, oh, you're gonna die, here's some stereotypical horror movie things for you to see, you're dead now.
But don't worry, all those weird things are going to be relate to what the ghost saw right before the ghost died later on.
Yeah, all the puzzle pieces fit.
Except that you have to kind of jam them together a little bit.
One thing we didn't mention...
You gotta spit on them.
Is
make them fit in there.
You gotta blow into the cartridge to make sure it works.
And jam a copy of Duck Hunt on top.
You gotta push it down.
One thing that happens before people die is they see centipedes.
I figured they were just...
That's pretty creepy,
I figured the centipedes were just out of work after the ring, and they needed some extra.
Sure.
But it's like there's centipedes from the ring, there are bees briefly from Candyman, there's scary puppets like the Puppet Master.
There's that lady with the eyeballs who, instead of eyes, she has mouths. Like
yeah.
In the box.
Like that Madonna video.
Yeah. Wait,
years
what?
Ago. The one, there's that Madonna video that was all like steampunk looking.
I don't remember.
There's one part where she has an eye instead of a mouth and mouths instead of eyes.
Oh, wow, that's important.
Like the Corinthian, with an eye instead of a mouth.
You should mention steampunk a couple more times, because then maybe we'll become more popular on the internet.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I was reading boingboing.net the other day. It said something interesting
Corey
about steampunk.
likes the steampunk.
Cartoon Research's Jerry Beck. That's Cartoon Brew. It's a different blog.
Yeah, anyway. So they eventually track down, they use Edward Burns' magical police powers to trace the chain of phone calls.
And there's some missed uses for, say, suspense or getting the audience interested, like show them tracking down the calls. You know, they made a whole movie, All the President's Men, about people tracking down paperwork and looking at people who had called other people. you know, that can be exciting.
So you think there should be more scenes of them, like, just looking through phone records?
Or they could do that in dramatic way. More scenes of that than, like, characters bumming around waiting to die or just not creepy nonsense that isn't related to anything.
You know, like weird ladies with mounds for eyes.
Or like the Ray Wise detour, which...
which was brilliant, but also stupid.
No, it was the best part of the movie, but it made no... It didn't tie into the rest of the film.
I'd say
all.
The best part of the movie is the only scary part when she's stuck in... Shannon Samosiman is stuck in... it goes to journey to the old abandoned hospital.
Yeah, the old burned out, asylum or something.
Yes, which... I bet the town has seen hard times. It has not rebuilt or even put up, that good a fence around it.
Yeah, so the ghosts can get in now.
I guess the ghost petitioned City Hall to leave it as it was.
I'm surprised there weren't more teenagers there. Like, I mean, if I was a teenager,
just smoking pot and shooting the windows out,
somebody to go in there, and then that person gets killed by a real monster or something,
and then the movie begins.
Or like a local fraternity sends somebody there on a hazing, and it all goes totally wrong.
You can either do 50 push-ups in your own vomit, or bring us back a ghost, and then
bring us back a mustache from one of the dead skeletons. Not one of the live skeletons from the old burned out asylum.
Oh, but anyway, she's wandering through and there's a bunch of non-creepy things that happen, like a zombie baby holding a phone in its hand and millipedes.
That zombie baby was very similar to the zombie baby in the Dawn of the Dead remake in that it was 100% CGI, which, as we all know, is really scary.
I just think all zombie babies look like Winston Churchill.
Nice. Look like zombie Winston Churchill.
Yeah. I think they all zombie Winston Churchill. He did a lot of bad things, but he won the war. So
they all look slightly less real than the baby from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
When the baby from the dream in Train Spotting is more realistic than the baby in your movie, then you have a problem. But anyway, she goes in and she finds the corpse of, it turns out, the girl's mother who died in the fire.
She's all kinds of fucked up,
and she's
right?
all burned and her teeth are coming straight through her skin and everything.
Her face all mixed around like the monster from one of those Resident Evil movies.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. I had nothing to say.
Yeah, just agreeing.
Which is descriptive.
But yeah.
It's not a joke. It's just painting a picture with your words.
No, because those movies are pretty good, right?
Yeah, I feel like Mila Jovovich. But I'm just adding extra syllables to everybody's names.
Yeah, no, it's funny.
On the subject of Mila, there was that commercial.
You're on a first name basis with her. Mila.
Well, I thought I was saying Mia. That for a particular reason, and that's because
she's European.
I thought it was Mama Mia.
There was a commercial recently.
I didn't do that well in the theaters.
Where,
it opened against Dark Knight.
She was promoting some sort of cosmetics, and I was really happy that in this commercial she identified herself by name, because, finally I know what
how
to think in my brain when I read that, and it's Mia Jovovich.
Oh, yeah, because it's Eastern European.
So everyone,
that makes more sense.
All Flophouse listeners, when you're talking about Resident Evil
or The Fifth Element,
you can talk about
Jovovich. Fifth Element.
Or what's his name?
Or Dummy starring Adrian Brody.
Or
Dummy starring Adrian.
Or Cuffs starring Christian Slater.
Or just past loves of Luc Besson. If you're writing that Luc Besson quickie overnight autobiography with a photo insert,
I like
section.
how it could be an autobiography. Like, we could be talking to Luc Besson right now, and he's like, you know what, I've been thinking about doing.
You know what, I gotta strike while the iron's hot. Let's put out this quickie autobiography. Just put some photos in there. Fill it with heartthrob stuff.
All I've been doing for the past 10 years is producing movies. So
he's saving up a big nest egg so he can make Fifth Element 2.
Sixth Element.
That'd make more sense.
So the Fifth Element was love, so I guess the Sixth Element would be like dreams.
Chocolate.
Yep.
It was so easy.
Outer space.
The Sixth Element is movies.
Movies like the Fifth Element.
They discover a copy of the Fifth Element and that saves the world. That's like the scene in Beastmaster 2 when he walks by the movie theater and Beastmaster is playing. I love that joke. When Leonard Maltin reviews Gremlins and Gremlins 2.
Yeah, man,
I loved that when I was a kid. Anyway, so this scene.
I loved that when I was a man.
Which was years ago.
Well, now that he's wearing those shorts.
Back when I was a man.
So she goes to the burned out hospital, and the mother is there, and she's all creepy and burned up, and the corpse comes to life, and it's just crawling over her and puts its face really close to hers, and it's this genuinely, and, like, creepy, scary moment.
And you think you're going to get some hot zombie on girl action?
Oh, yeah, because I love to see a lesbian scene where one of the people involved doesn't have lips.
Look,
or pupils.
Like, Ellie, I'll take what I can get. That's all I'm saying.
I imagine now you going you when your wife isn't around, you go into a website that's called girlonzombie.com.
Wait a minute, are we inadvertently giving some help to girlonzombie.com?
I hope not. The way we did with Aquafan or whatever
Aquafan,
it was.
Aquafan, yeah.
Which was the lamest site in the world.
That was the weirdest
site. It just said sex underwater. Anybody tried it?
Yeah. It's like, this is the official website of people who love having sex underwater. Here's post number one. Hey, has anyone tried this shit? Let me know.
Post number two, non-existent.
In theory, I'm into that.
Anywho, so the movie did have at least one like genuinely scary moment,
right?
When,
right, but
or at least creepy.
Other than,
I wouldn't necessarily
other than
say
that,
scary.
Yeah,
well,
my favorite part was Ray Wise,
yes,
who breezed into the film, promised to do a exorcism of the phone, and then completely failed in saving the girl. He like basically shot her being dead for his unsolved
for
mysteries.
His miracles show.
His miracles show,
which I assume runs on Lifetime after America's Psychic Challenge and before Kid Psychics.
And then he left again, and I don't know what the point of his appearance was, other than so that I personally would enjoy
get, it. To give it a shot in the arm.
The point of his appearance was, we can get Ray Wise for 2 days.
What do we got?
This is Ray Wise? Oh, I was thinking of Ray Parks. Well, we'll make use of him somehow. I guess we can't have him kickbox the ghost.
Nice. Or be the character Toad from
from X-Men.
Yeah, from the Uncanny X-Men.
But you were going to say, from the Uncanny X-Men. Not the title at all.
Shannon Sossaman was completely dubious.
I love that Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie. That was great.
Shannon Sossaman was totally dubious about the idea of an exorcism, but she was immediately accepting of the idea of killer cell phone.
You had a major problem with the fact that she never really doubted the idea that phones were killing people.
No, she jumped directly to, like, okay, I guess this is it.
But then
you know, it's like
she's
the screenwriter. Like, this is the thing. I'm going with it.
The movie's only 80-something minutes long. You know, they can't waste time with that.
Yeah, we're running out of time here, guys. I got to agree with it.
TikTok.
Now
I got to be on the set of Rules of Attraction 2.
Her character was like,
man,
I don't know. And the director was going, come on, hurry it up. Hurry it up. We don't have a lot of time in this movie.
Yeah, this film was completely improvised.
This
That's
is
what
for
explains
completely...
Wise's
parents. Because they happened to find him. He was actually waiting to go to someone else's house for a party, and they found him outside and just brought him into the scene.
Good movie making.
I will say, this movie hit me where I live, because for the past 2 weeks, I've been getting calls from an 888 number every morning around the same time, and I never pick it up because I don't know the number, and I think it's the blood bank trying to shame me into giving them more of my precious fluid. And
maybe it's a collection agency or something.
Well,
maybe
and they never leave a message. And then today, finally, for the first time, I get a message. This is Ryan from Time Warner. I've called you before about the free HDTV for 3 months offer that we've been running since you bought an HDTV recently.
But now it's too late.
Give me a call back before we run out of time. And it was like, this is the message you've been calling every day at the same time for 2 weeks and not leaving a message for. Like, this is the call that I've been dreading.
It's a ghost trying to trick you, Elliot.
It was.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, he's trying to build up suspense.
If I had answered the phone, and the message would have been like of me going, I don't know what to do. I don't.
Oh my God! What are you doing with that chainsaw?
That would have been. That would have been
a train running me over.
I would be. A train is running me over right now.
I can feel each individual wheel.
Hold on, I'm getting another call. Okay, I'm back. But, like, that would have been more fitting to me, like, than just this guy saying, I've called you before about this. Like, yeah, leave me a message, dumbass. Come on. I'm not a mind reader. But I almost wish it had been something spooky like that to make it worthwhile pressing ignore on my phone.
Add some spice to your otherwise relatively boring
day. To my otherwise boring day of producing television shows.
Whoa. Lording over the rest of us.
Yeah, I'm not lording over. I'm just saying my life has a certain amount of glamour that doesn't need ghosts in it. But
Elliot's,
I was still on it.
Elliot was late to the record because they had Brian Williams on the show tonight.
And we can't tape the show till late when Brian Williams is on because he has to do the nightly news
first. By the way, this is the second time this has happened, which makes me think that Brian Williams is the Flophouse's nemesis.
We can make it that way.
I like to think that Brian Williams is doing this deliberately because he knows that network television is on the way out.
I mean, and podcasts. He feels really threatened by this.
The future.
You know, 50% of people get their news from movie podcasts. Brian Williams is feeling that bite.
So I found out about Keith Ledger dying.
Keith Ledger passed away too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible because they just lost their family. Just lost Heath, and now Keith is dead. Also,
it was the Olsen twins.
Here's the old. They hate other twins.
Yeah, they did magic.
I don't know. Is that a prestige thing? I don't know.
No, they just use magic. It's cool. They're twins.
This is getting really conceptual, so I'm going to take it back to the film.
So, my favorite bit in the whole movie was when, you know, they go to visit with this, you know, really creepy little girl and who won't say anything.
To set it up, we think that the girl has been abused by her mom because of Munchausen by proxy, a disease that happens 10,000 times more often in the movies and TV than it does in real
life. This was another thing taken from another horror movie, because it's in
it's like The Sixth Sense.
In The Sixth Sense, when there's a tangentially related plot about Munchausen by proxy syndrome.
But anyway, they go to see the girl, so go on.
So they go to see this little girl, and she's got, you know, a teddy bear.
I just wish The Sixth Sense had followed up and done sequels about him and his ghost buddies solving crimes after the fact.
I totally agree.
That would have been great. Like, the ghost, he's like Dead Man, kind of. Like, the ghost of the victim told me where to find, you know, the murder weapon. For you see, officer, it was the mother who was the killer. Well, I don't know how you do it, kid, but you solved another unsolved mystery. Let's close the case on this one, boys. Well, let's just say I had a little help from my friends. And then he winks at a ghost who fades away. What a great show.
A ghost of a cowboy.
You gotta help me find me gold, Haley. It was buried out here and stolen from me by some varmints. He just travels the country solving crimes. And what's great is it's the 7th sense, 8th sense, 9th sense. You just keep increasing the numbers.
It works. That's the thing.
Just, sure. Anyway, but you were saying, so teddy bear.
Oh, yeah. There's a teddy bear that's a bandit, I guess, because he's got a little bandana around his neck. Like he robs banks in his
Western bear.
Cowboy bear.
So, and they're like, you know, they're staring at her while she sits in a chair by herself staring at the wall. And then
Oliver Sutton pops in. Hello, everybody. It's me, Oliver Sutton. Trouble with ghosts, eh? Tip, tip. Gotta go. Bob's your uncle, mate.
So, yeah.
Ghosts are real jacks. All right, all right, all right.
Just go down the apple and pears.
So Oliver Sutton shows up, and her teddy bear starts making the same noise as the magic ghost ringtone.
Oh, yeah, the missed call is always a specific ringtone, that's right.
Yeah, 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 and probably saw in the trailer. If not, watch the trailer, and you'll know what it is.
Not that frog song from England.
Yeah, and so Shannon Sasserman is flips out. She's like, oh my god, what's happening? And the nurse touches her, and she's like, oh no, that's just the song. That's the song the bear makes. And you're like, oh,
that's just the
wait
song.
A minute.
The song the bear plays.
That's the best. It's the best line in the movie, and the best performance of a line in the movie.
Yeah, her reading
a 0 out of 0
on deadpan.
A deadpan reading of a shitty, unrealistic line that no person would ever say. That's just just there to connect the dots for the three people in the audience who were too stupid to recognize that was the same song the phones were playing.
Do you think one of those people was like one of the executives who was watching a rough cut of the movie?
I have to
assume. What the fuck are they flipping out for?
I don't understand. Why is she so scared about the bear? That's just the song the bear plays. Let's put in a line of dialogue just making sure everybody knows that's just the song the bear plays.
Because if we
on the piano. When the bear was alive. That was the one song the bear knew how to play. It was like his heart and soul.
That was his party trick.
I can pick this out. All right, hold on.
There's also one scene where the girl is lying asleep with the bear in her hands, and you see the bear suddenly start moving towards the camera, and it turns out it's Ed Burns. In a reverse shot, we see it's Ed Burns picking up the bear. But the movie is trying to fake you out for a minute into believing that this is a film about an evil bear that comes
awesome.
To life and kills people, which would have been great. But
yeah, no, that would be definitely preferable to the ultimate solution.
It'd be like the video box of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
And the solution is a solution that anyone who has seen a Japanese horror film could have come up with.
Little girl who was wronged. Or no, she's evil, I guess. Little girl who's killed and attacks people through technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she never like makes a cat noise.
Like, it is pretty much just the ring.
Yeah.
Well,
not good. Well, we like the film have already laid in all the clues you need to put this together.
Do you know who committed the crimes?
Perhaps you should stop the podcast now. Write up what you think happened.
Put it in an envelope and see who was closest.
Are you done?
That's good for a laugh.
Let's continue.
Yeah, what happens is it has this weird...
It was a little girl, right?
It has this weird, like...
Yeah, it was a little girl.
Usual suspects ending where literally, like, everything that this girl sees while she's dying then becomes part of the tapestry of the film.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, they've got a creepy statue of a woman pushing a stroller, so that's why there's a crazy ghost woman with a stroller there.
And by the way, in the nursery of this child, they have the creepiest statue of a woman pushing the stroller.
It's so incredibly scary.
That only makes sense in the context of a horror movie. You would never give this to a child.
Oh, and also, and the girl, oh, she died of an asthma attack because her inhaler ran out of stuff, so that's why you hear a like noise like an inhaler every time someone's about to die. And this, she saw the bear right before she died, and she knocked
bear
it over
has a nanny
and it started playing
it.
And that's why she, you know, this, that's the song that plays. Like, sure, I think she's just angry that she has to basically, she can never escape the way she died.
Right.
She's getting older. She doesn't want to be associated with it anymore.
Ed Burns is looking at the nanny cam footage through this bear.
Also, there's, he says,
happened.
It's a nanny cam. People use it to, so they can watch their kids. No, a nanny cam is so you can watch your nanny to make sure she's not abusing your kids. That's They would call it a kid cam if it was for watching your kids, not a nanny
cam.
So wait,
a really good
the camera's not
show.
Supposed to be the nanny, right?
No, the camera's not the nanny. It's not like Nanny, the X-Men.
You know, the evil kid has been torturing the good kid, and the evil kid...
As evil kids do.
Yeah, and the evil kid dies
after being
locked in her room, and there's a problem because she doesn't have enough of her inhaler, and she's trying to call someone for help on her cell phone, which is why the cell phone is tied in. But the most hilarious thing about the idea of everything that she sees as she's dying being tied into her whole mythology is that she looks up at a jar full of centipedes, and that's why there's centipedes involved. Why there's a jar full of live centipedes in this
and
nursery.
Like, huge, like, these are the kinds of centipedes you find in the rainforest.
Yeah,
like, they're
exactly.
enormous. They're like...
Like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom centipedes.
Yeah, they're like porn star penis-sized centipedes.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of girth.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to
you
quiet the room.
You
gotta
say girth,
huh? Yeah.
I thought
listen,
it was gonna be me tonight.
If you're wearing shorts like that, one of us is gonna say the word girth.
Nice.
But, and my also... But they, and oh, and everyone who dies, a piece of candy falls out of their mouth. When they die.
I thought that was a grape.
It looks like a grape, but it's a piece of candy.
It looks like a marble.
It looks like a marble, a grape, a bauble.
Maybe a frozen grape.
A tiny thing of amber. But that's so... I don't remember if she sees candy or like maybe she's just got enough life to put candy in her mouth.
It's because every time the one little girl like hurt her sister with
a
knife or some
shit, candy.
She gave her candy, right?
Yeah, to shut her up.
said with the anger of someone who had to shut up a little kid at some point.
It's blood candy. That is
like Leonardo DiCaprio's movie about how they make candy.
Where Leonardo DiCaprio plays an Afrikaner in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
You gotta boycott M&M Mars. They're involved in the blood candy trade. Yeah,
so many Oompa Loompas died.
I want to see that parody trailer so badly now for blood candy. Where he investigates the deaths of innocent
listeners. Why don't you make a mashup and put it on
Hello,
YouTube?
Hello, the Flophouse contest. Try that as your entry.
100,000 hits right there.
Yep, I like getting lots of hits.
Listen, I'll give the Flophouse audience all the Ziggy pitches it wants if they will just make that trailer for us. All
right, so we have gone a really long time. Let's just skip to our judgments on this film, Elliot. What do you think?
I thought actually it was a bad movie, but we did have fun watching it. It was short. It moved really fast. It's stupid, but like the stupidness you could make fun of, and it wasn't like 10,000 BC where it was boringly stupid. So I give it a bad, but okay to watch. Stuart, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll probably go with Elliot on this one. I mean, I'm not going to say that it was really that great, but I think maybe I'm really biased because the past couple ones we've watched have been total shit.
If we had watched this after the Bratz movie, I probably would have given it a much worse review.
Yeah, exactly. But right now I'm feeling charitable.
Yeah. It's like when I watched, if I saw There Will Be Blood, watched it right after I watched Cries and Whispers, so I was disappointed. But if I had watched it right after I watched, you know, Fletch, I probably would have thought it was a much better movie.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is with this one.
Come on, Fletch lives. Let's give credit to
in
Fletch.
All of our hearts.
Yeah,
no, I wish Fletch had died in that movie and then it ended with someone pointing at another person's heart and goes, Fletch will always live on in here. And then they look up to the sky and Chevy Chase's face appears, yep, a single tear rolling down his cheek.
Hey, I like that movie.
Oh,
and
man.
And then he bursts out of his tomb at the end, like his mom.
Just his hand. Bow! Yeah.
No, he punches through the wall of the mausoleum.
And then he pushes his face out and goes, I'm back! And then the credit cut to black. Credits roll to, like, the Fletch rap.
And then there's a third Fletch movie where, like, Fletch goes back as a zombie to the newsroom and, like, eats Gina Davis.
Yeah, Weekend at Fletchy's.
Yeah.
They gotta pretend he's still alive.
Horrifying.
Anyway, but or Fletch becomes her. And Dan, what did you think about the movie?
No, I'm in total agreement with both of you. I give this a marginal fun bad movie recommendation.
Yeah, marginal is a good way to put it.
Again, if we hadn't had such a bad run of films, maybe I would rank it lower. But
yeah, well, if wishes were fishes, every day would be Friday.
Well, yeah, you know, like, know, it's one of those things where it's like, look, if you're not doing anything and you want to watch a kind of stupid movie where people get killed by a cell phone, this is probably one of your only options.
It's one of the top 10 movies in which someone gets killed by a cell phone.
We'll I'd say that. That's fair. Top 10. Maybe
I'm not going to say top 5.
Yeah, I'm not going to say in the first half of the top 10. But and Ray Wise is in it.
Yeah.
They could have easily cast that part with a nobody, but they cast it with the guy who should have done the job. Maybe Lance Henriksen could have done it too.
Yeah.
But Ray Wise, well, he's not as fun as Ray Wise.
No, he'd be more like, you know, terrifying.
Yeah. I get the feeling that when Lance Henriksen coughs, sawdust comes out.
Yep.
There's some kind of dry about him.
I for a while thought that that those lines on his face were tribal scars.
I really want to see something where he and Peter Weller play brothers.
That'd be awesome.
But it's like a comedy. Like they got to get their grandma's ashes cross country, but they never got along when they were kids. You
nice.
Know?
I was expecting it to be more like their brothers who are police officers in different countries, and they have to come together to solve a crime.
That's pretty good.
With aliens. What do we do next?
Well, next, Stuart, traditionally, we talk about movies that we would recommend.
Oh, right.
Cool. Of course.
Unlike
yes.
the film, though. We watched tonight.
Hey, Elliot looks like he's got something on the tip. Oh, wait.
I'm not here.
Okay.
I'm not here. I have to think about what I'm going to recommend.
I've watched a bunch of movies. I'm trying to remember one that I'd recommend. I've watched a number that have been good, but, like, they've already got a fair amount of press. So, like, I saw, like, Funny Games recently. That was great. The American version or English-speaking version. Dark Knight was great. Let's see. I'm actually going to recommend something qualified. Qualified recommendation. Partly because I was really disappointed in it. I watched...
well, that's a good reason to give a qualified recommendation.
Absolutely.
I want to give a qualified recommendation because the movie was sucky.
Mainly because I hated it.
I watched the movie Doomsday the other...
Oh, you were excited about Doomsday.
I was, and I still kind of am. it's, you know, it's the third Neil Marshall movie. He made Dog Soldiers, the movie about dudes fighting werewolves, which is pretty good. And then The Descent, which is great.
And then, Pretty Woman, right?
No, different. Wait.
And the other sister? Oh, that's Gary Marshall.
Yeah, that's Gary Marshall.
Princess Diaries, did Neil Marshall make that?
I don't think so. Were there werewolves in that?
I think so.
Okay, then he probably made
it. I didn't see it.
Well, Doomsday is about a bunch of bullshit, post-apocalyptic shit in Scotland. It was basically boring. but and it basically kind of felt like the guy was given a lot of money, and he's like, hey, I like all these other movies. I'm going to make the craziest movie I can with all this budget. You know, it doesn't really work that well as a movie, but it's really gory. So that was cool. It was nice to see a movie that has a big budget and is also really gory. And Malcolm McDowell's in it. So
so instant quality.
Yeah, obviously he's a great actor.
I'll never forget taping a Shannon Worry movie off of HBO late at night when I was a teenager, and being really surprised to find Malcolm McDowell in it. Right after a scene where a woman tried on lingerie topless, and then it was suddenly Malcolm McDowell was talking to the main characters, and I was like, what? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. From Clockwork Orange? Hold on. What are you doing?
Didn't he also star in Caligula?
Oh, yeah. He's made all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, and he was in Tank Girl.
Yeah, well, he'll make it pretty much.
Was he the bad guy in Milk Money, the film in which
Ed Harris,
a kid, gets a prostitute for
I didn't know there was a bad guy in that movie.
There was a bad guy in that movie?
I think. Well, no, that's I, like if I recall
saying,
Milk
that's like
Money.
If there was, that's like saying there's a bad guy in The Sandlot. Like there's an evil dog.
No, no.
There's no villain.
Milk Money, aside from being a movie,
his dad was the villain.
About
or like there's a that's true about Dennis Leary. There's a villain in Rookie of the Year. You know,
aside from being
that's Angels in the Outfield.
Rookie of the Year is the one where the kid breaks his arm and suddenly can throw major fastballs.
All those kids breaking their arms.
Aside from being a movie about a guy who finds love with a prostitute his son provided for him, it's also a environmental movie. Like Ed Harris is all about saving the wetlands, and Malcolm McDowell is some sort of anti-wetland guy, if I recall the movie.
He's an anti-swamp lobbyist.
He just doesn't like him. He likes his land to be dry.
So, just to summarize, if you want to watch a movie that will ultimately disappoint you, but will have a couple moments of like, wow, that was really gross, you can watch Doomsday.
Well, the movie that I think I'll recommend is, I just watched The Getaway, not the Alec Baldwin, Kim Basinger version, but
the Sam Peckinpah version?
Sam Peckinpah, Steve McQueen, Alan McGraw, and... you know, it's just a really... I know that people who like Sam Peckinpah sort of like look at it as a minor film, but the thing is, it's just a solid thriller. Like, it's a really stylishly made movie. And one thing I also found kind of interesting about it is a lot of it reminded me of No Country for Old Men. I mean, obviously, the basic outline of there being this sort of bag that the characters have and they're trying to get with it safely to... Mexico, while you know people from different sides are trying to find them, you know that's sort of like a standard like a Southwest noir setup. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of the atmosphere of the film, like I really felt like the Coens maybe looked at that, or maybe they looked at the book, Getaway. You know, it's just a really enjoyable thriller.
Not bad. The movie I saw most recently that I actually liked was a movie called Rembrandt, starring Charles Laughton in the title role of Rembrandt Van Ryn. And it's an Alex Korda film from the 30s. But I figure it was their follow-up, I think, to The Private Life of Henry VIII. Like, we got to do another biopic about a guy from centuries ago. And it's pretty good.
Are you sure you're not thinking of that movie Andre about the trained seal?
No, I don't. That's a different movie.
Not Beethoven.
No, not Zeus and Roxanne either. This is about a human painter in the 17th century, I guess. But that was very good. But I think more along the lines for our listenership, if you can't find Rembrandt, because I don't know if it's available in any format anywhere, I taped it off of Turner Classic Movies, is not too long, I guess a couple months ago, or I guess it was about 4 weeks ago, because it was during my last break, I rewatched Scanners, which I had not seen all the way through in a long time, and there's something about that movie. It's a really tight thriller for the most part, even if it doesn't always make sense, and the basic mechanics of being a scanner are kind of slapdash, but there's something so comfortingly 80s about it that I can't quite explain. But I think it might be because I was born in 1981, so I grew up as a kid in the 1980s. But when I see movies that were made in the 80s and really feel like they were made in the 80s, it's like, even though it's a movie about guys who make people's heads explode with their minds, there's something like, oh, like this is a warm bath of a movie. You know, everybody's clothes are kind of 80s-ish, their hair. You know, they all drive 80s cars and have 80s faces.
Michael Ironside is really good in it.
Michael Ironside's great in it.
They're also all very Canadian.
They're all Canadian. And Canada is like an eternal 1980s. Yeah. Like, Canada now is like the 1990s, but in the 1980s it was like super 1980s. It had been the 1980s for a while there. And another Cronenberg movie, Videodrome, feels the same way, that it like... It's so 80s, everything about it, that it just feels like pulling a blanket around my shoulders. You know, it's very nice. So, Scanner. If you want to feel warm and fuzzy, Scanners. And also, a guy's eyes explode at the end. So
thank you, David Cronenberg, for all the warm feelings you brought to us.
I don't know if he's like, I have the same affection for the movie War Games, because everything about it is 1980s.
Sure.
Whereas something like, say...
Are they remaking that?
They're making a sequel.
That's true.
I guess Joshua, the computer that takes up a room, is still... They would have... Like, that thing would be the size of a jump drive now, but I guess...
Yeah.
Maybe it comes out of retirement, because this time it's personal, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe terrorists hack in. I don't remember. Dr. Falcon, you know, is probably passed on.
Maybe it turns into one of those Transformers that are so
maybe they're so big with the kids now. I just hope Dabney Coleman is brought back for it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
He hasn't done a lot of work lately.
Star of a Short Time,
Drexel's Class,
Mad Men of the People,
Cloak and Dagger,
Buffalo Bob or Buffalo Bill, whatever it's called, Cloak and Dagger. Yeah,
not as good as I thought it was.
No, That's one that doesn't age well.
No, it doesn't.
But War Games.
That's a 1980s movie.
But yeah. War Games is great.
War Games holds up.
I think I've recommended it in the past. War Games is so fantastic, even though it's pretty silly. It's got Eddie Deason in it. I remember watching as a kid, watching War Games. I mean, like, this is a great movie. And then they go to Professor Falcon's Island Retreat, and the next thing you see is a fucking pteranodon flying around and being like, holy shit, this movie just got so much better. And there's the disappointment of it being a remote-controlled, like, gliding machine. Yeah. But just the last thing I expected was my favorite thing in the world, a dinosaur, to appear in this movie. Oh, that makes me feel so good just thinking about that.
Well, we should wrap it up soon, but I want to say I mentioned a contest earlier. And
Contest of Champions.
We have been very vague about this contest.
Which is surprising. We put a lot of thought into this contest. It's not like we announced it out of nowhere with no forethought.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm drunk when we do these.
It's not like you're drunk and wearing tiny shorts when we do these.
It's not like Stuart's drunk all the time.
And the AC's off, so it's getting kind of sweaty.
Yeah, it is getting sweaty.
I wish I had my thighs completely exposed like you do.
There's three men hanging
out.
No,
you don't.
Sweating.
Makes the chair feel weird.
One of them in really small swim trunks. Just being guys together.
Yeah, just being dudes.
But
wait, we were talking about our contest thing, right?
Contest, yeah.
Before I got really oddly dreamy. There's a contest on. If you want to enter it, send us an email with the subject heading Flophouse Contest to theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. And I realized that aside from not really setting rules, we didn't set an end date. So I was going to say, get in your entries before August 20th.
Wow. There's a lot of time left in this contest.
Well, this is a... We only get together to do actual episodes.
Yeah, once every 2 weeks.
Once every 2 weeks. And so I'm going
to
give...
Wait, just to clarify, I'm not allowed to enter the contest, right?
No.
Why
would you
want to
win the prize of watching a movie with
employees
us?
Employees in the Flophouse are not allowed.
You already do that.
I'm allowed to keep watching movies with you guys?
Yes.
Okay, they're... cool.
In case what Stuart said didn't clue you in, the prize is to watch a movie with us.
And it's
to
fun.
To have some snacks, to appear on the show.
Travel costs are provided by you, but snack costs are provided by us.
Yeah,
I'll buy beer,
and I'll get Popeyes if we're anywhere near Dan's apartment.
I think we have to do it at my place.
Oh yeah, that's
we
right.
Maybe can do it here.
Ooh.
Anyway,
I would say don't put this off to the last minute because we've had some strong entries already.
We have had some strong,
some surprisingly strong entries.
So that's all I want to say about that.
For the Flophouse, I'm Stuart Wellington.
For the Flophouse.
I'm Dan McCoy.
I remain Elliot Kalin.
Peace.
Didn't Jonathan Lipnicki also do the movie where his friend was a vampire?
Yeah.
The Littlest Vampire. It should be like a 1978 Christmas special on ABC. The Littlest Vampire.
With like crummy stop motion animation? Or...
Yeah, Rankin Bass style.
This is pretty comfy.
I'm very comfortable.
I don't know. I'd be more comfortable.
Yeah, I'll move the microphone.
Hello.
I'm talking now.
In your tiny bathing suit.
In my tiny bathing suit. The Littlest Bathing Suit.
Starring Stuart Wellington.